Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
When I first started, you know, people sort of saying, oh, Helen's gone mad. You know, she started hanging out with kind of drug dealers and money launderers and all these strange tech geeks and, you know. And now a lot of different people in different industries coming to me and saying, oh, you know, you were talking to me about that blockchain thing. Can we actually have a chat about that now?
You're listening to Women Tech Charge from the Evening Standard with me, Anne-Marie Imafadon. Can I wear blockchain? What is Bitcoin? And what does it have to do with horses? In this episode, I'm talking to a woman who can answer these questions simply and concisely. And she's also working hard to make sure that as many people as possible can make great change using the technology. Put your wallet away, we're getting started. I'm sat here almost 7 hours from the major rail station Marne-la-Vallée in Evening Standard's offices, sat opposite a guru of the technology that we call blockchain. She's working hard to ensure that we're all, or at least business people, are able to cut through the jargon of one of the biggest tech protocols of our generation. Welcome to the podcast, Helen Disney, CEO of Unblocked.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you for coming. I'd said a little bit of what you do and who you are in that intro. What's the official elevator pitch for Unblocked?
So Unblocked is a platform for helping people to understand blockchain and distributed ledger technology, and in particular in different areas of business. So blockchain is a technology that's foundational, a bit like the internet. So when you say blockchain, it's very hard to break it down. Mm. So blockchain, as it relates to your area of interest, so that could be healthcare, it could be energy, it could be finance, it could be social impact, it could be any area. So we try and go into those vertical areas and really unpack what blockchain could do in those industries.
And why blockchain? Why are you, I'm going to say, obsessed? Would you say you're obsessed with blockchain?
I think I probably have become obsessed with it over the last 5 years, which is a bit scary. But I actually got into this whole area by accident. I'm not a technology person by background. I'm not a programmer, so people shouldn't be intimidated by me and my techie skills. But I think what I can bring to the area of blockchain is good communication about what the technology can do and what kind of problems it can solve. So I got very interested in blockchain because of that. So I looked first into Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and then I realized that blockchain was the technology that sort of underpinned cryptocurrency and was kind of like this giant sort of database that's spread all over the world that anybody can access, and therefore we can share information and we can fix problems that way. So suddenly we could start to communicate peer-to-peer, not just on the internet, you can communicate with information peer to peer. So we can both look at a website at the same time and see the same information. Mm-hmm. But we can go directly and exchange money with somebody else without going through a bank or a credit card company. So that's a sort of peer to peer transfer of money.
And that's the cryptocurrency.
So that's cryptocurrency. Yeah, yeah. But then if you think about blockchain more broadly, you can use that not just for money, but for any asset of value. And so you could start to see ways that people could use that to perhaps share healthcare data or incentivize people to use renewable energy sources and things like that. So I got actually first interested in blockchain because of the use in the media, because I used to work as a journalist. And I thought, this is really interesting because the media are struggling to make money. And if you could perhaps have some kind of micro payments for articles, maybe this would be a better way of bringing revenue into the media rather than having sort of cumbersome subscriptions or having to rely on an advertising model. Yeah. Mm. So I was really interested in blockchain because of the problems it can solve rather than the technology. It's just a toolkit to me for things that we can do.
What sort of journalist were you?
So I worked at the Times newspaper as a leader writer and on some other newspapers, writing editorials as well, writing mostly about social and economic policy issues. So how to make the NHS work better, how to improve schooling, those kind of things.
That's quite a difference from being in the centre of this kind of blockchain world.
It is. So I think what happened was one thing that you learn if you're a sort of a leader writer or you're a commentator is you have to pick up subjects that are quite complicated, break them down and explain them very quickly in an easy way that people could understand. Mm. So when I first started learning about Bitcoin, I thought this is completely sort of impenetrable. It's really hard for people to actually understand what it is.
What was that first incident? Where were you? Take me back to that.
Yeah. So a friend rang me up and said she was going to work on a big Bitcoin conference. This was at the end of 2013.
Yeah.
And she said, do you know anything about Bitcoin? And I said, no, absolutely nothing. You know, I think I've read two articles about it on the BBC website or something like that, you know. But I was at a place where I just sort of finished working on a previous business and I was kind of open to new ideas. And I just thought, you know what, this Bitcoin thing sounds quite interesting. I'm going to start reading about that. But a lot of the terminology that was being used, I mean, even I mentioned peer-to-peer, you know, what does that mean? You know, being able to transact directly with somebody else. People understand peer-to-peer in terms of file sharing, you know, sharing music and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But lots of the words get used, distributed ledger technology, what does that all mean? It's very difficult for people to get their head around it. So I wanted to be the person that would hopefully help people not find it so kind of confusing and difficult.
In the simplest, most layman, most... for a six-year-old listening, and apologies to any other sixes that are listening, what is blockchain?
So blockchain, you can think of it like a shared diary. So imagine if you were six and you had your little diary that with a lock and a key, but you were willing to maybe share some information in that with some of your other friends. You could all access the diary and see what's in it at the same time if you were willing to trust each other. So it's a way of trusting people over a network all around the world, and you don't have to be in the same country or the same room, but everybody can see the information at the same time.
And does everyone have a key to be able to see the information?
So if you were part of that network, then you would all be able to have the key to unlock that information. If you have a key that matches that particular network, then you can get in and see what's in there.
So it's the shared diary. And then if we think maybe for slightly older, so for a 15 or an 18-year-old, how does it work? How does everyone being able to see that shared diary, how does that work?
So you can actually go online anytime and have a look at a blockchain. You can go on something called a Block Explorer on a website. So Bitcoin was the first sort of most famous example of a blockchain. Blockchain came about because of the creation of Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency. So it's the way of like a giant online bank statement of keeping track of all the payments that go on the Bitcoin network. And it's open to everyone. So you can see transactions ticking along in real time on a Block Explorer and see, well, look, someone sent, you know, 0.2 of a Bitcoin to somebody else. You don't know who the people are, but you can just see the transactions going backwards and forwards. So imagine like a big online bank statement for using a particular type of currency. That's basically what a blockchain is.
And like you said, the first use was with Bitcoin. There was a research paper that was done by a secret / anonymous person.
Yes, the so-called pseudonymous Satoshi Nakamoto, who nobody really knows. Many people have claimed to be this person, but nobody really knows who it is.
But they wrote the paper about using this shared diary, this shared ledger, this distributed ledger to be able to securely move these nuggets of currency.
So online money would be transferred so-called peer-to-peer, so from you to me to you, or anybody else I wanted to transact with without having to go through a third party, an intermediary, a middleman to help us trust each other. So normally if I send money to you online, how do I know that you're Anne-Marie? You could be anybody. So this trusted ledger allows me to say, well, I can only get the money from Anne-Marie if we both agree that we are who we say we are, and she's got the right code and I've got the right code. We can sort of match like two pieces of a puzzle and we can unlock the transaction, so the money will flow from one person to the other. And that ability to do that kind of secure, trusted transaction online without anybody else verifying, we don't need another person to say I trust Anne-Marie because it's built into the technology. That's the real sort of power of Bitcoin. And that can then be used for other things. When you think about a blockchain, if you can use it to send money, you could use it to keep track of other kinds of online assets, things of value to you.
So it's like a souped up spreadsheet.
Yeah, a kind of shared diary, a shared spreadsheet. Some people say a sort of secure online cabinet that you can unlock. Mm. I think those are some good analogies.
And the other cryptocurrencies are just different types of things that are stored on that same blockchain.
So there are different types of cryptocurrencies that have different aspects. So some are about privacy, keeping things, you know, more private online. So people have sort of invented different types of cryptocurrencies with different features. Some might be to incentivize you to use solar energy, for example. So you could get rewarded if you were using solar panels and get some cryptocurrency called SolarCoin, which says, okay, thank you for using solar panels. I'm going to give you a financial reward for doing that because that's something I want to encourage. That's just one example, but there could be others.
Santosh's paper on Bitcoin was how we're able to unravel not only the cryptocurrency itself, but the blockchain technology that understands it. How are we able to have this distributed ledger that is unchangeable by other people that we can all trust?
So what was created was so-called consensus mechanism called proof of work, which meant that in order to create Bitcoin, different people involved in the network around the world have to solve a complex computing problem. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit like going through the stages in a computer game. You have to sort of start at level one to get the first coin. And then in order to get up to the end, you've got to go through all the stages from level one to level 55 to get more and more coins or more and more advantages. So so-called proof of work is about proving you've solved this difficult kind of computing problem. And it takes a lot of computing energy. So this is where Bitcoin mining comes in. Sometimes people ask about that. So the miners are the people that actually create the coins. So they go around trying to fix this difficult problem, and when they've fixed it, they get a reward and some more coins get created. So that's the way that, if you like, you know, think about normal money, you have the Royal Mint and they create the coins and the notes. In an online currency, obviously you don't have physical currency, so how do you do it? You have to prove that you've contributed something of value, and the thing you're contributing is proving that you can be the next one to race to solve the puzzle. And and then those puzzles are kind of joined together in a chain, which is where we have the word blockchain. So the different transactions are grouped together in a block, and the block forms a consecutive chain of activity. So we always know who the last person was who solved the last puzzle. And that will keep on going until we get to the all of the Bitcoin that ever will be created, 21 million of them. And then that process will stop. But the miners will still have a role in verifying that transactions take place on the network. So they're kind of, if you like, the security guards of the network to make sure that people are behaving fairly and can trust each other.
It's fun because originally it was almost like the gold rush is what I kind of imagine it was like, where you were getting people who were kind of doing, the early miners were kind of picking things and they were finding them quite frequently, and then you needed more and more computers and kind of more and more people kind of working together, actually.
Exactly. So at the beginning it's very easy. So you saw these stories about someone, you know, became a Bitcoin miner. You could just download the software onto your computer, and then they accidentally forgot that they were mining because it wasn't a big deal in those days. So they chucked their computer away and it's now on a landfill site in Cardiff or something, you know. And they, you know, could have been a millionaire, but they forgot about it, you know. Whereas now Bitcoin miners are generally, you know, large data centers in parts of the world where energy is cheap, because you need a lot of computing power to actually solve these puzzles. It's all the computers are working together to try and sort of solve the next more and more difficult problem. So it's become more of a global industry of mining, and more kind of members, nodes, so-called nodes, sort of different members of the network are involved.
So given that that's the underlying principle for that blockchain that was for Bitcoin, how do we get from blockchain for Bitcoin to blockchain for insert other use case here.
So what's happened with blockchain is, if you like, it's evolved from the beginning where you had Bitcoin, which is a public kind of open source project. So anyone can be part of that. Anyone can download the software, become a Bitcoin miner, even though the chances of actually getting any Bitcoins now are quite small if you were just one person with a computer, because you don't have the
power.
You know, the odds are stacked against you. Mm-hmm. So what people have now done is created other types of blockchains. So you could have public blockchains, a bit like Bitcoin, but for doing different things. Or you could have private blockchains. So you might want to create, a bit like having an intranet rather than the internet. Mm-hmm. You might want to create a network within companies for solving a problem. So within banking, for example, companies might want to band together to try and say, we're going to try and speed up the time it takes to settle transactions between different countries, because at the moment there's quite a long delay money going across borders. Maybe we could all join together into a private blockchain network, and we could actually do that process faster, because if we could all trust each other and we didn't need the current intermediaries, that middlemen that we have in the system, we could hopefully do it cheaper and trust each other more easily, so we could speed up that time.
It's almost like having a magnifying glass or kind of 3D glasses that they put over that entry within the ledger or within the blockchain, that then they're able to interpret that information in a way that is kind of human readable.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, in online banking, you see a bank statement, you log on to your bank and you see, you know, what's supposedly in your account. But in reality, of course, there's lots of things going on behind the scenes. The bank is investing in various things on your behalf, or it's, you know, transacting in many different ways, but you don't see all of that. You just see the part that relates to you and your money.
Mm. I think it's funny. It's still something that sometimes I end up thinking, because I'm very cashless, so I don't really carry cash. So a lot of my transactions are all kind of through online banking and through cards and contactless and whatever it might be. And so sometimes I'm a little bit like, you know, that £200 isn't really there. Something I thought since I was a kid, kind of, you know, is that £200 really there? Or if I move it to someone else's account, they're in the same bank, the £200 hasn't really moved. It's a bit like the Goldman Sachs advert at the moment, where they go and they kind of make a deposit into the bank, and then it's like a hole in the table and it goes down. There's a lady downstairs that's kind of just sweeping around this pot of cash. And I think this is like even more so, that whole thing of it's just on the ledger, just saying where that bit of cash that now has been owned by that person, not really.
Well, that's, I mean,
it.
That's one of the things actually that I think first motivated the creation of Bitcoin was lack of trust in the financial system, because those numbers that are on a bank statement may not necessarily be the reality, of course, you know. But, you know, once you have your own money and you can be your own bank, then you can see what money you've got in your wallet and it belongs to you and not to a third party institution.
And no one can hack yet. No one has hacked in to change it to be owned by someone else.
Not the Bitcoin network.
No.
I mean, exchanges, as you mentioned, have had their problems and been hacked. So where you've got kind of a bridge into, you know, having other people involved, and maybe there's a security breach, or the, you know, the security of that exchange is not good because you've got a bridge to the traditional financial system, there's more opportunity to break into it. But the Bitcoin network has never been hacked so far.
Which is something that's notable.
Highly secure, because it's a bit like, I think the example that someone gave me is current security. You know, you have a big fence around your house and you put up, you know, lights and you have a security guard, but someone can still break into it. But with Bitcoin, you know, you've got so many actors in the system. It'd be like having to break into multiple houses with multiple security systems all around the world, all at the same time. It would be actually quite hard to do.
So your whole business is, we want people to understand this and to know what it is. And we know that in the last 5 years, blockchain has come up and is the big buzzword and is the big new thing. And we know that it's still quite scary. So what are your top things, top takeaways for people who maybe aren't interested or are still apprehensive? Why is this something they should know?
I think it gives the individual a lot more power, and that could be many different examples. It could be, you know, you're living in a developing country and you don't have any access to finance. Suddenly somebody can send you money from wherever they are in the world very cheaply, almost for free, compared to the current sort of remittance costs that we have now. And you're empowering someone in a developing country and helping them to own an asset. And that's really the only way out of poverty, is if you can not live hand to mouth and you can have your own resources. It could be that you want to, you know, many people are worried about the issues around climate change. You want to really start trying to find a way to incentivize people to use renewable energy, and you can find a way to motivate people to do that. So I think we can all think of examples of things that we personally care about, or I want to manage my parents' healthcare from a distance, but, you know, I can't be there all the time physically and they're getting old, so I can keep track of their healthcare, maybe even finance their healthcare in a frictionless, easy way, communicate, find out what's going on with their information if they trust me to be part of that system. Mm. There are many things that we sort of do now that are very difficult to do in the current communications that we have. So if we can tie finance and information together using blockchain, then I think those kind of problems will be impactful for people on a personal level, not just for global banks and, you know, other people, which, I mean, it'd be great if banks work better, but that's probably not something that motivates people day to day. But they would be motivated to see, all right, I could keep track of my loved ones' healthcare and help finance them to make a phone call in hospital in a completely easy way, just using a simple application.
Mm. I think for me, the biggest thing has always been that lack of interference. Like, once it's in, it's in, it's locked in, no one can change it, no one can tamper with it. Which I think there are very few things that we have left that are, you know, entirely tamper-proof.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it can achieve will be enormous, and we're still really at the very early stage of that. Mm. But you see large global organisations, you know, the UN, WHO, EU, national governments getting involved in how can we use this to, you know, improve welfare services? How can we use this to solve social goals, help people with healthcare problems in developing countries, refugees who might need access to their documents again because they've been in a natural disaster or a fire.
Yeah.
You know, there are many good examples we could think of where we could improve radically how we help people in a crisis.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What's been your favourite use case?
I think one of the ones I'm most interested in is actually something still quite new, but the use of blockchain for mapping genomic data, because this is another ethical issue where you know, people want to get their genome sequenced, they want to know their kind of DNA and their medical history, but at the moment companies are making a lot of money out of selling that data on. And
exactly.
I actually just read a fantastic book, which if you haven't read it, I highly recommend, this book called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. And this was a woman who died of cervical cancer, but her genes went on to be incredibly significant for all kinds of medical discoveries, polio vaccine, IVF, all kinds of things. But her cells were taken without her consent, both before and after she died.
Right.
And so if you think of something like that, you know, being able to sequence your genome and keep it securely in a wallet that you own, and you can decide whether or not you want to maybe donate your information for medical research, or maybe you want to even make money out of your healthcare data because you need the money, or you know you just feel that
just
that's
you
something
can. It's an asset that you should be able
you
to
can use because it belongs to you. That's a very different way from the way that we, you know, conduct research now, and I think it puts much more power back in the hands of the individual,
which in the main can only be a good thing, I guess.
Yes, I mean, I think
mostly only
the hard part is, will people sort of want to manage their own data? Will they know how to do it securely and safely? Because there are certain aspects around using blockchain now which are still quite hard for people to do in a simple way. Sometimes the way that these things are designed is not very user friendly, and people need to have, you know, passwords and private keys, these kind of PIN codes, if you like, to access your data or your money, your online money, your sort of cryptocurrency money, that's different from the way we do online banking or other things. So and if you lose that, you might not be able to get it back. So there's things people have to learn about how to do that safely. But once we learn that, I think there'll be all kinds of amazing applications.
So that was a massive story in the last couple of months of the, I think, 150 odd million wiped from a Canadian cryptocurrency exchange, because the guy that had that owned it, I think it was, and had the password. The only password, sadly, died, and his wife and no one else has access to that now.
Yeah,
I mean, is that something that is happening? Is that one example? Is that something that happens quite often?
There have been quite a few examples of cryptocurrency exchanges that have had various problems, from sort of fraud, money going missing. I think that the example of someone dying is probably
it's extreme, right?
A new one in terms of cryptocurrency exchanges. But it's a good point and goes back to what I mentioned about people needing to learn how all of this works. Mm. Because if you're working on sort of cybersecurity and things like that, you know, somebody I've met, another woman who educates around these topics, said, you know, you wouldn't lose your house keys. You know, you and your husband know where you keep your house keys, or you and your partner know where you keep your house keys, you know, and you have several sets of them, probably in case you lose one, you have another one, and maybe you give one to your neighbor if you trust them.
Yeah.
But when it comes to cryptographic keys, you know, private keys for accessing something as important as a lot of other people's money.
Yeah.
There need to be backups. There need to be regulations around how that's stored and protect the consumers that are using those exchanges, because they're holding money there. And ideally, you wouldn't actually hold your money on an exchange. You would use it to exchange your cryptocurrency, but you would keep your own money in your own wallet and keep that secure.
Yes.
But these are the kind of steps that people will need to learn, because it's a whole new way of managing money and dealing with things.
And also jurisdicting for that as well, right? Because it's not something that a particular country is then going to say, by law, if you're going to run this exchange, you must keep X, Y, and Z. How do you think we're going to get around this?
Yeah, there's a big discussion at the moment. I'm obviously I came from a journalistic and also public policy background before I got involved in the tech world. So I spent a lot of time dealing with policymakers, regulators, people that legislate on these things. And we're moving to a point where people are starting to say, well, look, there needs to be more protection. So there's a lot of discussion going on in the UK. There's something called Crypto Assets Task Force, which is looking at the whole issue of how you manage not just cryptocurrency, but these kind of tokens that are exchanged can be used in various different ways, as access to services, or as a way of investing in startups, or as a way of exchanging money. So a cryptocurrency could be a currency, but it could also be a kind of reward point, or it could be an investment vehicle. Mm. And so when you think about the different ways these things can be used, there's a lot of ethical and kind of policy implications. So I think we will see more regulation coming along, and it's already starting. There's been more announcements from the US regulators and also the regulators here about at least they're mapping out what should be done and asking other experts for their inputs to see what to do, because the politicians don't really understand this either, so they're learning as well.
Yeah, your whole business model though is that a lot of people don't understand this, right? So it's politicians, it's business people, it's society as well, to just have a little bit of an appreciation for what it is, what the risks are, what the opportunities are.
And it's interesting how it's evolved, because when I first started, you know, people sort of saying, oh, Helen's gone mad. You know, she started hanging out with kind of drug dealers and money launderers and all these strange tech geeks and, you know, Bitcoin people, you know, what's she doing?
She's
joined
the cult.
They didn't really see that this was something that was going to have a greater impact on business and society. And then it sort of evolved into, oh, she's doing that blockchain stuff, but we don't really know what blockchain is, you know. And now it's moved to another phase, which is a lot of different people in different industries coming to me and saying, oh, you know, you were talking to me about that blockchain thing. Can we actually have a chat about that now? Because it's starting to impact on me. I work in the music business, or it's starting to impact on me. I work in the media, or I work in healthcare, or I work in an energy company, or I work in creative industry in some way. So yeah, it's come a long way from the last 5 years when I first started and people just thought I'd gone a bit nuts.
Yeah, so it has only been 2.5 years. How much have your friends' perspectives of you working with drug dealers and other unsavory characters versus what it actually is, how far have they come on that journey with you?
I think Bitcoin has moved out of that cliche in a way now. I think people have kind of understood it's not just that, and that it has a much bigger impact. I mean, obviously last year there was a big craze for kind of fundraising using different types of cryptocurrencies, so-called initial coin offerings, where a lot of startups were launching projects. And so that kind of hit the headlines for good and for bad. There were lots of scams and frauds, but also people really started to see a lot more in the press and in interviews, stories about Bitcoin, stories about blockchain. So I think there's probably, hopefully, a greater sense that I'm doing something that's reasonably legitimate nowadays, even if people still have a lot of questions. But I've definitely converted some. I'm still working on my dad, I think, and some of the others.
We've got time. Where does blockchain meet music?
So music is an interesting part of the package, in the sense that, similar to the media, you know, as we've had kind of downloading and online access to music, obviously it's harder for people to protect their intellectual property. Mm-hmm. It's harder for people to make money in the same way they used to in the past, sort of selling CDs and sort of physical media. And so various companies are looking into different aspects of that. So it might be that they are using blockchain to keep track of someone's music rights, so that they can receive royalties and payments, and that could be done in a more frictionless way, using cryptocurrency to make the kind of automated sort of micro payments. So someone downloads your song, you instantly get a payment, and it's clear who has the share of value from that use of that track. But it could also be other more innovative things. So you could have, as different technologies come together, not just blockchain, but, you know, other types of new technologies as well, you could have an online virtual concert, and you could perhaps reward people for taking part in that concert, being an audience member, but maybe also finding ways to learn more about that audience, and then be able to use that to sell other products and services to people that are particularly interested in a band.
What's the adoption been like, though? Because I think we've spoken on the podcast, I know we're talking about music in one of the other episodes, and adoption always is the thing that holds back this technology and fear.
Yeah.
So for the creative industries in particular, have you seen that people are very open and are, you know, as soon as they know they're wanting to jump on, or is there still some sort of hesitation or fear?
There's a lot of hesitation and fear, because, again, it's something people don't understand well. And I think the sort of more mass adoption will come when large corporations take this on board and create partnerships with blockchain businesses or develop their own solutions. There are a few artists that have been working with blockchain. Imogen Heap is one that's famously developed a kind of blockchain music business. Mm-hmm. I think Massive Attack have also put some of their tracks on blockchain. It's still quite early days for the music business, and a bit like when kind of online you know, downloading came along, it was something that was quite slow to evolve, because the music business is, you know,
old school,
taking its time to adapt to that new trend.
What's one of the weirdest examples you've seen?
Someone told me a while ago, I don't know if this is still in existence, that there was a kind of blockchain that was like a Tinder for horses. And so basically it's called Studbook. And it would allow you to keep track of the sort of mating potential of horses. And so those people that want to breed race horses would use it as a way of kind of keeping track of which horses were mating with who.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I thought that was hilarious.
That. It's so old school, but so new school all together in one.
It's a very unique application, but
and it's global as well. Horses. I was watching a show on this recently, because obviously the horses have to fly across the world to go and participate in races. So there is a kind of a global component to what they're doing anyway.
Yeah.
So being able to kind of keep a ledger of.
And they're very, very valuable resource. So if you think of sort of a crypto asset, maybe a crypto asset is a horse with a valuable pedigree. You know, rather than just, you know, some money in someone's wallet.
But do you need to tag the horse so you know that that's definitely the one that they're talking about?
So they
part.
Would need to have some kind of physical connection between the horse and the
like RFID horse, like a bionic horse. I wonder whether that avoids it from being able to run in a race, if they find a chip in it.
I don't know. That's a good question.
But you have to like prove that that's blockchainable.
We'll have to go back to Studbook and ask them.
How important has failure been in your journey? Failure to stand on the right side of the yellow line, to wear your seatbelts or otherwise?
I think really important, actually. Sometimes when things have gone wrong have been the times where obviously you feel terrible and you just want to hide in the house for a few days or maybe longer. But those are the times when you kind of move on and you think, what do I really want to do now? Because that didn't work. So leaving my job at the Times actually was a big thing for me, because I thought that was what I really wanted to do.
And you did that before or after the policy bit? What's the
So
order?
I worked in think tanks for quite a while, then I went to work at the Times.
And that was straight out of university or
So I left university, I worked in a small business for a year that was a mobile phone rental company.
Okay.
Then I went into a think tank for 4 years. Then I went to the Times, and then I set up my first business. So actually leaving the Times was the prompt for me to set the first business up, mm-hmm. because I thought I wanted to be a journalist full time, and then I sort of realized I didn't. and I didn't actually enjoy it as much as I thought I would. And my contract had come to an end, and it was a bit kind of like, oh, well, everyone thought it was so great. I was working at the Times and now I'm not. So now what am I going to do? And that was kind of the beginning where I started thinking, well, what was it I really enjoyed about working in public policy? I enjoyed being able to connect people around ideas and help amplify those ideas and get the message out. And mm-hmm. so that was what drove the first business. And in a way, it's also what drives Unblocked mm-hmm. is amplification of good ideas and helping them to accelerate. So there's a kind of common theme, even though I appear to have done lots of different things in my life, been a journalist, run companies, worked in policy, worked in tech. But I think that's probably the common theme that runs across.
How did you know to move from the first business to the second one?
It was really very accidental. So getting okay. involved in the Bitcoin event was something that I just did because I wanted to do something completely new. And I thought, this has nothing to do with what I did before. It's, you know, financial technology. It's nothing to do with sort of politics or social care or healthcare or education or anything as I was working on before. Little did I know that it was kind of actually going to lead me back in a circle to back to where I started, but attacking it from a different angle. Mm. So I kind of thought, well, this is really weird. People are starting to talk about me like I'm a woman in tech, but, you know, I'm not actually someone who likes upgrading my mobile phone or, you know,
find it
difficult to figure out how to use my TV properly and yeah. this kind of thing, you know. So this is really kind of ironic that I'm a woman in tech, because actually my husband laughs at me all the time because I'm so hopeless. So, but the communication of it and the fact that these entrepreneurs are trying to fix really quite entrenched social and economic problems, that's what kind of drives me on it.
You also do need to empower lots of different people to be a part of this process mm. as well, right? So I think Global Thinkers Forum is something you're involved with. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I got involved in the Global Thinkers Forum, which is a non-profit foundation last year. And what I love about the foundation is the fact that it's trying to encourage female empowerment, entrepreneurial thinking, and highlighting people all around the world that are sort of fearless in their approach to fixing problems. So it's not just technology, although obviously that's the area I work in, but people in politics, people in creative sectors, writers, all kinds of people working on social impact in different ways. So we had an award ceremony at the end of last year, which marked 100 years of women of passion and purpose, and awarded lots of different celebrated women who've achieved great things, which might be anything from helping women who've been sent to prison to be rehabilitated through to, you know, having success in business. Annabelle Carmel, who famously has been very successful in children's nutrition, she was one of the winners. And we'll be doing some more events. We've got a global conversation coming up next week, actually, across six different cities. GTF also has something called Athena 40, which is an index for promoting the top 40 forward-thinking women in the world. So I really enjoy being a part of that, because I like to think that I can use some of my experience over the last sort of 20, 25 years of founding different companies and working in quite a variety of different sectors to help younger women have more confidence about their career, and also particularly women that want to get into tech, to feel like you don't have to be intimidated. It's not just a male-dominated place. It's not somewhere you can't go and ask for help.
So that was blockchain. That was an intro to blockchain. If people want to learn more, they can come along to events.
They can attend my events. Yep. Yeah, they're open to the public. We have a lot of different types of events.
And have a look at the socials. And this is just the beginning. I think that's the other thing. You know, we're all still learning. Like you said, we're at its infancy. So there's still so much more to be gained. So, you know, treat this as gold rush era, I guess. You're lucky to be alive now listening to this podcast at a time when you can still be impactful in the world of blockchain. So come and join the blockchain party.
Yes, I should have worn my blockchain necklace. I'm sorry I didn't, but you've got a great necklace.
It's fine, it's a podcast. We can pretend you've got it on.
Next time. Thank you for having me. It's been great to talk about it. And I learned some things from you too about good analogies for blockchain. So I should be scooping them up.
You can find Helen on Twitter at HDisney, and Unblocked is on Twitter at UnblockedEvents. Don't forget to subscribe to Women Tech Charge on Apple Podcasts, and it would really help if you rate and review us too. For the latest news, sports, entertainment and more audio content, visit standard.co.uk. We're Evening Standard on Twitter, and on Insta it's evening.standard. I, Anne Marie, live on Twitter at aimafidon, good luck spelling that, and on Instagram at notyouraverageami, which is a little bit easier to spell. Get in touch, have a chat, ask questions using the hashtag WomenTechCharge.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.